Welcome to episode 95 of the Pickup Podcast. It's your boy Marcus here, bringing back the guru, Chris Denny. More tournament talk today. Sweet 16, Elite 8. Stick with us, we'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. So, you know, we were just talking about it. Got finally into the Sweet 16. Whole bunch of craziness went down. Rounds we predicted, or at least predicted, some teams would struggle. I know you talked about you saw Kentucky. You weren't on Kentucky, maybe not seeing them lose, but you weren't hot on them. You saw UConn losing. We talked about the LSU-Iowa State game. That was crazy. A couple other teams. Colgate almost fucking had it. I was going to look like a fucking genius for Colgate. But then they absolutely shit their pants the last, like, 4 minutes of that game. I was highly disappointed in that one. And I was highly disappointed in South Dakota State, but that was happening while we were recording the last episode. But I think we're good now. Yeah, so we got the Sweet 16 up. Still got 3-1 seeds. Baylor dropped out. North Carolina. I did not call that at all. We lost Kentucky. We lost the other 2 seed that lost.
We lost Auburn.
Auburn, yeah. Still got St. Peter's hanging around. So, what's your takes on the Thursday slate of games coming up?
Yeah, I will. Before we get right into that, I will say that the one team that I was expecting that we should have prefaced more was Miami. I thought it was an awful matchup for Auburn if they were to get that far. I had Miami beating Southern Cal no matter what in every single bracket I made. I thought 10 seed was disrespectful for them anyway, and they didn't just beat Auburn. They kind of beat the dog breaks off them, especially pulling away late. So if I think they take care of business at Iowa State. I know that's Friday, but yeah, Miami is going to be, in my opinion, the one that the high seed out of the ones that are left, you know, between Michigan, Iowa State, St. Peter's, you know, that makes a Final Four run. Just they look good. They look complete. McGusty's a baller. And obviously Wong is pretty damn consistent. Even at an off game against when they played Auburn and Miami, just as a whole, came out. So before I wanted to get into all of them. I think Miami's the team to look out for.
Yeah, especially since their path right now to the Final Four is Iowa State and then the winner of Kansas and Providence, and I think they can hang if they end up going against Kansas.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, they got. They're a tough team defensively too, and Kansas reminded me from watching them again play, you know, last week, that if they're not getting production out of Agbaji and Christian Braun, and they're only relying on you know, down low, right, then they turn into Kentucky a little bit. So first they got to beat Providence, and Providence is tough. I know you were never high on Providence and from the beginning, but I think, yeah, whoever wins that loses to Miami, in my opinion.
Yeah. Wasn't really high on Providence. However, you know, they made it through. I give them their credit. I think I had them losing first round.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, South I Dakota did. State. Yeah, South Dakota State. But, yeah, they I don't know whatever the spread is in that game. I would definitely probably take Kansas to cover.
Yeah, it's -7.5 against Providence if we're moving to that game. I personally am probably going to take Providence to cover just because I think anything over 6 when you get to the Elite Eight and Sweet 16 is too much in general. But I think Kansas wins, but I think Providence will keep it close for the sake of it just being a tournament game.
I mean, I don't know, because Providence wasn't like their defense is a little bit better, but they haven't played a team that has, you know, the firepower that Kansas has. Cause I know we were just talking about they're relying on, you know, Agbaji, but I mean, he's like legit.
Yeah. I mean, It's just tough, man. Again, so I've been betting on every single game. I'm 31-22 overall and betting on every single one. And right now, the logic that I've gone with and which has given me success is that to throw away any logic you think you know about two teams playing that you've watched all year. It's been more of take the large spreads and get rid of them, make them close games, and March is wild, and I've kind of been living and dying with that with Irv. Irv and I've been, you know, coming together with our bets, and the live and die by March is wild has kind of done us pretty well so far. So should Kansas win by 10 plus? Yeah, they should. Will there be some fuckery that Providence makes it close for no reason? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'm looking at the spreads for these games right now, where they stand as of right now. I'm actually kind of surprised, honestly. So I'm looking at Houston and Arizona right now out in the South region. Arizona is -1.5, and I honestly have Houston that I think should be favored in that one. Houston is playing like a one seed.
Yeah, Arizona -1.5 is concerning to me for anyone that's a fan of Arizona, because anytime you see a one seed whatsoever with only 1 to 2 point favorite, you're basically saying Vegas is saying it's a pick 'em. So you go with the hotter team. I think you're right. I think Houston wins. I actually did not have Houston covering against Illinois, and they clearly did on, Sunday. So I think, yeah, it's a time where you have that completely right, and Houston wins money line and a good value at probably like plus 110, plus 120.
Yeah, it's Houston, to me, through the first two games of this tournament, looks like one of the more impressive teams. If I had to do like a second chance bracket, I'm probably putting Houston into the final. Their path is, like I said, you'll probably end up playing like probably three of the least talented teams, or the, right, not least talented, but least performing teams on their path in. Kind of favorable for them.
Yeah, I see it. I think anyone can beat Villanova, and who knows what Michigan team comes out. I think that Michigan's going to give Villanova some problems as well. Do I think they cover? I don't know. It's -5. So that, as a bettor, that gives you a more safe feeling at the cushion of 4, 5, and 6 area for a favorite. So I'm probably going to lead Villanova to cover because they have covered every game so far throughout the tournament. And I think Michigan run and their run ends because there's not going to be two double-digit number seeds, you know, getting into the Elite Eight, I don't think, in my opinion. So I think Miami takes that honor and Michigan's run bow outs. But Villanova wins, and then if we're right and Houston moves on, I think you have it right that Houston would have the upper hand on and the best matchup of taking on Villanova.
Look, Arizona to me was one of my like big favorites, like, and they kind of let, and I know TCU is one of the better defensive teams coming out of the Big 12, really in the country this year. But man, it's just the way that they struggled mightily inside rebounding, especially when my boy Benedict was having a pretty off shooting night. They seemed, the whole offense kind of just died for a smooth like 6 or 7 minutes in that second half when TCU took the lead. Now TCU, you know, they did some shit where they fumbled their own bag really, and allowed a few, you know, they missed some free throws at the end, and they allowed Arizona to hang around. You know, eventually he hit the shot, Matt Mathurin did at the end to tie it up. But yeah, that they should have been put away at least 3 or 4 times that game, and that's a little concerning to me, especially when they're coming up against a better, much better team than TCU, who's also hotter in Houston. My confidence in Arizona has been shaken a little bit.
I agree, and I think it's a tough matchup for Arizona because they kind of play a similar team to TCU in Houston, just a more polished defensive team. So if they have that kind of moment of 5-6 minutes of a scoring drought, that 5 to 6 minute scoring drought against TCU turns into a 7, 8, 9 minute scoring drought against Houston.
Yeah.
To where that's not, you're not coming back from that. So I think for that South bracket, it will be Villanova, Houston, and the Elite Eight. And that's pretty confident to me on the betting side as well, that Houston covers, Villanova covers.
Yeah. I don't know if you talked about the Purdue and St. Peter spread. Who are you taking on that?
I just saw it, and in my head, I was comfortable with St. Peter's +8, and it's going to be St. Peter's +12.5 is the official line. I'll probably lock that in tonight because it probably moves. And I don't think St. Peter's wins, but Purdue is again, one of those stagnant offensive teams. It's just St. Peter's going to have a tough time scoring the ball. But I think that they know that, and there's going to be an emphasis on playing some tough defense. The problem is that Purdue's so damn big down low. But they have 2 7-footers and obviously Jaden Ivey, who if they do double down low, you know, Jaden Ivey can do his thing at any point in time. So if they can hold their own and their centers can play big for at least a little bit, I think they keep it within 13 points. So I'll be taking St. Peter's +12.5.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about this other game, one that I consider probably the hardest to pick right now, just because of what you call it, like the hot streak factor. So I'm looking at North Carolina and UCLA, right? North Carolina has been uncharacteristically good from the guard positions in the first two games of the tournament. I think that's, like I said, I value that highly. Coming into the tournament, guard play, shooting, and then they've always been solid inside with, you know, rebounding, interior scoring with Bacot. Leaky Black has been on another level defensively. North Carolina actually looks like a team that's upset-minded. And, of course, you know, they almost collapsed that game with a little bit of help from the refs against Baylor. But, you know, the fact that they did go to overtime and then did pull that out, I think it's kind of scary to me if you're UCLA.
I completely agree. And Vegas agrees with you. And that's the most important thing. That's the most important opinion you could ever have. It's number 4 against an 8, and UCLA is favored by 2.5. And that tells you it's basically a pick 'em again. I think it's one of those things where we don't have, because St. Peter's is going to lose. We don't have that Cinderella storyline other than Miami at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough for TV, and the only thing that makes a better storyline is going to be a Duke North Carolina Final Four game. The only way that happens is if North Carolina beats UCLA first, and I think North Carolina wins straight up. So I will be taking North Carolina probably +2.5 for the sake of taking the points in case they do lose and it's close on a betting aspect, but I think North Carolina wins. And if I do make a second chance pool, I'll have North Carolina beating UCLA.
Yeah, but it's just like, to me, UCLA, I mean, I'm not knocking them either, because at the same time, they've been the more consistent team throughout the season. You know, they got consistent guard wing play. And like I said, that's what I really value. Theirs is more like reliable, you know. And like I said, that's what I was talking about in the last episode. I see that, you know, that experience that they had from last season that stuck around, you know, those positions, they're carrying this team back to this point. They've been here before, obviously. North Carolina, these guys in particular haven't, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's been, what, 3 seasons since North Carolina made it past the first weekend of the tournament, because they didn't even have a tournament in 2020.
Right.
So this is a whole, like, new experience for them, and I think that's something that I would kind of weigh in. That's why it's so difficult for me to, you know, try to pick this game. Because, I mean, obviously you almost always want to take the hot hand, but at some point experience and consistency, you know, kind of weighs out too.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that game that they played against Baylor, and other than, you know, the Minute getting ejected and kind of the tides turning, right? When I didn't watch a lot of North Carolina this year in general, but watching RJ Davis shoot the ball in that game, I thought gave them something that they didn't have the entire year, really. I mean, I know RJ Davis was okay. I think he averaged maybe 12 points a game, somewhere around there.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, like 30. Like that's
30.
And Caleb Love in the first round. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's uncharacteristic, but that's exactly what you need in March to make
it. Yeah, and then Manek looks like old Manek when he was at Oklahoma. I don't know. It's a team that out of nowhere, if they can give Baycott help, they can beat anybody. It just depends how much defense they want to play because they don't play a lot. They just at all. And
well, I would say even Leaky Black, I mean, he's been basically shutting people down offensively. He's taking out their top wing player.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he knows his role. And it's wild to see like someone like RJ Davis now and Caleb Love. When you had, I remember last year, everyone was talking about how good, what is it, Kerwin Walton, that's his name? How good of a three-point shooter he was. And now he's someone that can come off the bench out of nowhere and hit and knock down five threes on you. So, I mean, I think they're just a March Madness team. They're a get hot from three and have Baycott take over one-on-one if he needs to. And UCLA doesn't have that big guy that can just shut down Baycott, you know, unlike, you know, Baylor would – with their size. So it's just a tough matchup for UCLA, in my opinion.
It is, but I think it comes back down to what you're talking about. They don't really play defense. UCLA is a very efficient offense. Like I said, they're very guard wing oriented. You know, they have consistency out there that UNC doesn't typically have to defend because UNC actually, I think, thrives better when they're not being pressured from the perimeter. Which is the complete opposite of what I thought going into the season. I thought UNC was going to have, you know, lockdown perimeter and maybe Baycott would be soft in the middle and that would be the attack point, Baycott and Manek. But no, it's actually the opposite. You need to beat UNC with elite wing play. Like, you have to. You have to make RJ Davis and Caleb Love guard somebody.
Right.
Because when they don't have to guard somebody, Baylor wasn't really getting that much pressure on them out there. So you see RJ Davis just going crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
100%. I mean, looking at that full slate, and it's going to be a half North Carolina bet, a half North Carolina spread, and then money line. I'm not going to touch. I think that might be my favorite bet of in the over. The over will probably get played, too, because of what you just said. UCLA is going to have to keep up that pace that they're probably not used to. The over is 141. Yeah, I think that gets smashed. I think it's a 80 to 74 type of game. So that's 154. So I think the over is definitely a play too.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. I think I'm a tentatively, for the moment, pick UNC, but I'm still high on UCLA. I guess if I had to swing one way or the other, I'm probably going to take UNC just because they're so hot right now. And it's kind of hard to deny your eyes. You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you. And that's a tough game. I still think Texas Tech and Duke is tougher than North Carolina UCLA, and I'm sure you have some sort of bias, but I'm torn, and I would love to hear your thoughts because it's going to persuade my betting.
Man, bias aside, because obviously my Duke bracket has Duke winning every game. That's full bias. Unbiased, I have like three of my original brackets where Duke loses to Texas Tech in this round. Texas Tech is kind of the nightmare matchup. Texas Tech is actually the favorite game, the favorite in this game. So I just don't like seeing teams that have forward pressure that forces Paolo to guard. I don't like seeing teams that run that forces Mark Williams, you know, into transition defense opportunities, having him get up and down the floor. That basically puts him on the bench more. Theo John's getting in. Theo John is cool in half court, but I don't really like him in transition. He doesn't really add much. He's a body. Yeah, he's a screening bruiser. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
In the half court, he puts a body on somebody, gets up, gets rebounds, but you're not running with him. He can run on offense, and he gets back on defense, but, I mean, there's only a limit, you know, to how much he can do this. So I don't really like teams like Texas Tech.
I mean, quite frankly, it's an awful matchup for y'all.
Yeah,
it's what I thought was going to be an awful matchup for like Texas too with Virginia Tech, which that was disappointing. But Look, it's going to be such a weird game for Duke fans because Vegas has the over-under at 137, and they have Texas Tech as a point favorite. So that means you're looking at already a low-scoring game that Duke's not used to because Duke scores 80 points a game. So Vegas is saying, hey, we're looking at a 70-67 Texas Tech win.
Yeah.
Which is weird on its own, but I've seen Duke go into shooting slumps, and when they have to win one-on-one ball like they're going to have to against a very, very stingy man-to-man defense with Texas Tech, probably the best defense left in the field. Now you look to Banchero, and who you saw me tweet during the last game. I think he is so fucking lazy and does not have that. I think, what's his name, said it right, our other boy. He doesn't have that takeover factor to him. It's not there, and it needs to be in a game like Texas Tech. So I think that'll be the difference maker.
So this is my problem with Paolo, which I think he does have a slight, but he has the ability to do it, right? I was live because I'm in a group, you know, talk sports and shit like that on Twitter. And I was, you know, telling them live during the game when Paolo went on like a little 6 or 8 point run by himself in the first half.
Oh, he hit those 2 threes. Yeah.
He hit those two threes and he came back and he had that, that dunk. Right. Yeah. So he had like a little run and, you know, he was feeling himself and shit. And I was like, this would be crazy. And there was like, I said, yo, Powell's going to go for 30. So someone said, I was like, no, he's going to do what he always does. He's going to get 15 and then everyone else is going to start playing.
Right.
And he's going to stop. He, like, for whatever reason, he's comfortable with getting that 15 to 20 range. And then he stops looking for his shot. I mean, maybe it's an effort, you would say, to get other people involved. And then to an extent, it actually did help Duke later down the stretch because Paolo was such a dominant force in the first half, came out in the second half. You know, you got Roach getting attention, getting the ball because attention's on Paolo. You got Keels pushing the ball in transition and, you know, attacking the rim more. I mean, it does open up the offense for other people. But like you said, when you have to every single time, the only game that I actually saw him consistently the entire game start to finish look for his shot, try to get to the bucket one-on-one was the second UNC game that we lost,
right?
And the fact that, you know, he had to do it, that was the one time I was like, okay, if you have to do it, can you do it? And he wasn't like god awful, but it was not great. I think he's what, 11 for 26 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like 23 points on 26, you know, attempts. It wasn't great, especially in a losing effort. And that's really the only time that I've seen him push the issue from beginning to end. Now, I will say, like I said, situationally, Michigan State game that they just played, clutch buckets down the stretch. He got the ball to Keels for one, and then he got the ball to – because he was doing a lot of what Wendell Moore usually does with the basically point forward type shit,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a little bit of a, you know – little monkey wrench, you know, in defensive game plan. You don't expect it as much from Paolo because he had like 5 assists in the first half. But, you know, he got a little dish here, a little dish there, and then he had his own bucket at the end to kind of seal it. I'd like to see that also, but sometimes, like you said, you're going against Texas Tech, a team that's they're going to man up on you and they're going to deny the ball, basically everyone force you to win one-on-one. I mean, if he can do it 15 times a game, he's going to have to make 15 shots. He hasn't done all season.
Yeah. It's gonna have to be. And Texas Tech has that. I think you're gonna see that Santos Silva, he's a forward slash center for them. He only plays around 15 minutes a game. I would not be surprised when you watch that game. He's out there 25 minutes being real rough with Banchero. And you know Banchero doesn't, you know, isn't the most physical guy in the whole world. Can be. He's not. And even Mark Williams, if he, you know, Mark Williams is a physical specimen. And, you know, he's big, but you get a senior like Santos Silva down there who's throwing a couple bows, you know, on these freshmen. It's gonna set a tone to where Duke's going to have to man up and play some big boy ball.
And that's my problem because we're just talking about Williams right there. Mark Williams gets 2 fouls and folds defensively. He can't play past 2 fouls. He will not do it. Maybe it's Coach K saying don't pick up that third foul because, like I said, you can't really fully depend on Theo John to be your next center out there for the majority, you know, large stretches of the game. So he gets to playing real timid, doesn't body up on the inside, kind of lets people get those turnaround shots over him. He's not jumping for blocks anymore. He's just playing with a frame, which which is cool against smaller people, but you have, you know, people skilled on the inside. They can shoot around the frame. That's what they do in practice.
Right. With the length of, you know, whether it's McCullers or whether it's Bryson Williams, that's, you know, because AJ Griffin normally gets a good 5 to 6 open looks a game. I'd be surprised if it's over two or three. So, I mean, it's going to be the shooting lights of Wendell Moore and Roach. And I like Duke. I think Duke wins just because their offense is a little bit better than Texas Tech's defense. And I don't think Texas Tech's offense is going to generate enough points. And like you said in the first episode, no matter how good your defense is, offense is going to win the game. And I think that's where Duke just takes a slight edge. I think Duke wins, but it will be a grind for them.
I'm still not fully convinced. I mean, I'm going to go with my bias for right now, but this is just me being real. I'm not fully convinced. I've said since the beginning of March that I feel like the hopes of any championship run rest with the performance of Keels, Roach, and Mark Williams. And all three of them proved me right in the first two rounds, especially Roach in the second half of the last game when Duke was down. He was kind of that spark plug that got us back up. And then, you know, everyone else, you know, just kind of finished out on a round, you know, all around performance.
Right.
We don't have any real seniors on the team. Wendell Moore is a junior, and he's basically the senior leader. Roach is a sophomore. Williams is a sophomore. Sad to say, or maybe not sad to say, but this is like the most experienced Duke team in a hot minute. So maybe some of that carries over, but like you said, Texas also has experience.
Yeah, it'll be the best game, I think. I think it's the best game on Thursday, other than Houston, Arizona, because I think Villanova wins by a lot, and I think Arkansas is a little – I had Arkansas losing a while ago, so I think Gonzaga shits on them. And then Friday, I think St. Peter's covers, but Purdue wins, I think – Kansas cover or no, I think I'm sorry. I think Providence covers, but Kansas wins. I think North Carolina pulls the upset, so to say, and Miami wins pretty convincingly. My best bet would be Miami -2.5, probably. I think they're the hottest team in the tournament when it comes to someone who wasn't very valued too much other than Michigan. But I'm excited for the betting portion of this. I think there's a lot of value, a lot of money to make, and should be a fun 2 days.
So real quick, give me based off your predictions just there, who you have for your final four going into the next round?
Well, all things considered, I would have Duke and Gonzaga playing. I'm going to come back to that one. That's going to be tough. I'm going to have North Carolina probably get into the final four.
Okay.
Out of the East. Out of the South, most likely it's going to be Nova. Because I think Houston wins, but I think Nova beats Houston. But I'm gonna take a look at if it does become Houston Nova, Houston might be someone that edged toward. But if it's gonna be Arizona Nova, I take Nova.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of the Midwest, I can't go against Miami. I think whoever wins Kansas Providence, I think Miami beats. Now if Miami loses and Iowa State wins, then I'm taking the winner of Kansas Providence. So in a perfect world, I have in my final four, it would most likely be Miami, Villanova, North Carolina, and then Duke, probably.
Duke over Gonzaga?
If Duke can pull that out. And the only reason I say that, if Duke gets there, is because I want to see that Duke North Carolina matchup so bad. If Texas Tech wins,
I think Duke. Part of the reason Duke dropped the ACC tournament championship was because they couldn't get up for Virginia Tech the same way they were hoping to see North Carolina.
Right.
Duke beat Gonzaga earlier this season, but obviously that was back in November. Like, in that early, you know, neutral site game. But I think there's value in that. There's experience between the players, between the coaching. It's just, I don't know. I'm losing confidence in it the more I see some of these other teams play. Gonzaga doesn't look as dominant as I thought they would be. They've been on the verge of, you know, being on upset watch at some point in all of their games.
Right.
For a very small portion of that game, you know, they were like, what, up only like two, or they were tied or whatever. Actually, it wasn't that small of a portion. It was actually into the second half. But, you know, then they pulled away by like 20-something. So not really concerned about that. Everyone has a little first-round scare. But I just feel like the Gonzaga is just playing their brand of basketball so well right now that, because, I mean, Memphis had them down, like down.
Yeah.
They were in the best, like, fashion that they could. And they just went on, what was it, like a 22-4 run or some shit like that to take the lead back.
Right.
Like, it's just just demoralizing shit like that. Like, it's like, okay, you did basically everything you could do to have them down. And it's like, well, what's enough?
It wasn't good enough. And Arkansas only putting up 53 points a game against New Mexico State didn't show enough to where I think they have any chance of that upset, because you see what Gonzaga can do and when they're in a crisis. Now, if you're not hot and you're not a hot team coming in, you need all the confidence you can get against them right now. But I think, to your point, that's why I think Duke has the best chance of beating them.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I didn't even mention this really, but to Duke's credit, they kind of had the same thing going on. You know, they didn't ever really have any worries against Fullerton, which that actually made me feel good that it was never really in question. But then also, like you said, Michigan State had us down 5 within the last 4 minutes of the game, and they finished the game on a 20-6 run. That's the kind of turnaround that I'd like to see. The thing is that, like I said, it gives me confidence in Gonzaga. I've seen Gonzaga do it more. That's why I'm a little more confident. It's really the first time I've seen Duke do that all season. There have been several opportunities where Duke could have done it, and they folded. You know, that's how we end up with those 1 point, 2 point, 3 point losses earlier in the season. The only other time that I think I've seen Duke actually prevail like that was in the ACC tournament against Syracuse, where we've got Syracuse's best shot the entire game from like 5 different dudes going fucking ballistic from 3, and we actually answered. So if that's the kind of Duke that's going to keep showing up, I'm cool with putting them against anybody, including Gonzaga. But I got to see them beat Texas Tech first, because that's like the kryptonite matchup for Duke, this Duke team.
Yeah, I agree. And just because I want to have some bold statements on file to see if we can make some cool things happen, I will predict that Providence will be up by 3-5 at halftime on Kansas, and then lose outright right on the spread at around 6 or 7.
I can definitely see that happening. Providence's offense is not bad at all.
It just – they have that one Horsler or something like that, the one white boy, about 6'7", can shoot. They have Justin Manio, who's a South Carolina transfer, can shoot okay. Jared Bynum, 6-man, and I've watched a ton of Providence. Providence pissed me off so much this year. They were the epitome of, I'm going to win, and Purdue was the same way. We're going to win, but we're not going to cover. We're going to win a lot. We're going to win 20-plus games, and you're going to bet on us to win because we're hot, but we're not going to cover. So I watched a lot of Providence, and look, they're okay, but they're not. They don't have like that it factor, that one player that can take over. Nate Watson should be down low, but not against Kansas Center. He won't be. So it's a tough matchup for Providence. Providence will keep it close. Ed Crowley's a great coach. After halftime, though, Kansas pulls away.
And if we're talking about common opponents, you know, Kansas just played Creighton. Creighton pushed the shit out of Kansas for a hot minute. Recently played Creighton. Providence played Creighton before the tournament. And I think that was in the Big East tournament, and lost 85-58.
Yeah.
So I'm not really that. I mean, that was kind of one of the factors why I wasn't super high on them. They really don't score. I mean, they score, you know, somewhat efficiently, and they can put up, you know, runs. But I really think they're more defensively inclined, and I don't really hold that too much in the tournament.
Right. I don't know. It's been nice for betting because you just bet the unpredictable, and you bet away from logic, and that's been the nice portion of it. Of course, some of it, you know, like I missed out on probably 6 or 7 bets strictly because the better team did cover, and I gave the other team a chance. But I'll take 31 and 22 any day of the week, and you know, I think it's going to be a very similar model. I think you have. You ask yourself for a lot of these games, like North Carolina, like Arizona and Houston, why is the line so small? And you just leave it at that. You don't try and think about it anymore.
Yeah. All right. So that's an interesting Final Four you got there. Got the dream matchup, Duke and Carolina, and then you got Miami and Villanova. That's ACC takeover in the Final Four? Turn up, man.
Yeah, they didn't play well as a whole conference all year, but
3 out of 4, I'll take that, man. What?
For sure.
If I had to go the same way, I got Gonzaga, North Carolina, Houston, and Miami.
Yeah, I think Miami's gonna be the one to where we look back and we're dead set right on that. I think Kansas is an overrated one, and I think Providence is not very good. But
well, I mean, I think I said it in the last episode, right? I didn't think that. I mean, granted, I did. I said I thought Auburn should have been a one seed. I said there were 3 teams that I thought were for sure one seeds, and then one of them wasn't.
Right.
So,
where do you think Vaccaro gets? Where do you think he should get drafted?
Should get drafted in the top 3 for sure. I mean, to me, as far as size is concerned, NBA size, he's the most physically ready to start playing. And then maybe not start on a good team, but start on a bad team or get quality NBA minutes on a really good team. He could right now, like tomorrow, if he wanted to suit up for the Hornets, he's probably their 3rd best player. Maybe. So I think Bancaro's, like I said, top 3 for sure. The ceiling for him is my real question, because some days he's like, is he going to be like the next Carmelo, or is he going to be the next Tobias Harris?
He is the next Jabari Parker.
Nah, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that.
Jabari Parker.
Don't say that. Jabari Parker doesn't count. Man, Jabari Parker was on his way and he blew both of his knees out like twice. I don't think his ceiling was anything to do with skill related. I think that was extremely unfortunate circumstance of injuries, a string of injuries. I mean, the first time he was probably on his way to winning Rookie of the Year, in my opinion, before he tore his ACL his first season. And then he came back after that and then tore his, was it the same ACL or was the other ACL? I think it was the other one that he tore. And then he was averaging like 20-6, and the Bucks. And he was supposed to be like the Bucks number 2 next to Giannis. That little, you know, for their championship building hopes, supposed to be that number 2 spot. And I think he really could have been if he stayed healthy, but obviously it didn't happen. He lost his really all sense of lateral mobility. Not that he had like a ton, but he was just so bad defensively after that. And I think it all comes back to losing both of his knees back to back. And I think he had a 3rd knee injury. I don't think it was as serious as those 2. But I think, like I said, Tobias Harris is – he's looking more Tobias Harris's, which Ant has a funny thing that he said about Tobias Harris. He's like, you need Tobias Harris to get 18 points, he'll get you 18 points. If you need Tobias Harris to go out and score 30, he'll get you 18 points. Shout out to Ant, because Ant said that. And I had almost the exact same thought with Paolo Banchero. I was like, man, I was like, it'd be nice if Paolo could give us a 25-point game, 30-point game, but I'm like, I know he's going to score 17. Yeah. He's going to put up an efficient 17-9, and everything. Like, damn, he scored 17 off, you know, 8 of 15 shooting. And I'm like, okay, but we could have used 25 there. Like,
no, I think that's a good comparison. I'm just glad you don't have him sold at 1. I think Jabari Smith, by far, is the number 1.
No, I said that in the last episode. I think Jabari Smith is the, when I said I was talking about Auburn. Yeah, when I said I thought they were number one, I was like, I think they had the best player in the field.
Right.
And Chet is a lot better than I gave him credit for at the beginning of the season. I thought he was – beforehand, I thought he was overhyped. You know, the whole unicorn thing, 7 foot, shoot, block, all this, that, and the third. I was like, yeah, I mean, that shit's not going to – one, he's playing in the West Coast Conference. And I was like, two, that shit's not going to fly 82 games, you know, a year in the NBA. But he's proven himself, especially, like I said, in these runs where obviously they've been down or close, tied up with these teams. Chet and Drew Timmy have just been going takeover mode. And if you can show that, especially consistently, just did it back-to-back in tournament games, that you know, goes pretty far with me. So that's why I have Gonzaga in my Final Four, beating Duke or Texas Tech, either one.
Yeah, because I think there's going to be a bet that's going to come out for the NBA draft order, which I wish I took the bet for the last NFL draft order. I don't know if you remember that. I went 15 for 15.
Dude, I remember that shit. You were live tweeting that shit. That shit was insane.
I could have gone to Vegas, found that bet, put $30 on it, and probably would have won $30,000 in hindsight. But I think it should go probably Jabari, Chet, and then Bankero and Chet might switch. Depends who it is. But it's cool to see all three of them were in the tournament. But I think the last one standing will be Bankero out of that. I'm sorry, probably Chet out of that. I don't know. Either of them. It's going to be a good matchup if they both get there.
But I will say, I think Bankero has more dog in him than I gave him credit for. Because apparently he's taken a lot of the talk personally. And as a Duke fan, I like to see that. Because he got on, you know, they won against Michigan State. He immediately got on Twitter and said, yeah, fuck y'all.
Well,
he didn't say that, but he said, y'all said we wasn't making out the first weekend. And then I implied, fuck y'all.
I hope so, because in my opinion, I think he looks like the biggest bitch on the court every night.
I can't even fully disagree with that. Like I said, he'll go on a 6-8, 10-point run by himself, and he'll put together like a hoops highlight mixtape worth of shit in 10 minutes, and then you don't hear from him until 4 minutes left in the next half.
Yeah, I don't know. But we will see, I guess, and it should be a great 2 days of betting, and I'll keep everyone updated on that front. But look out for Miami.
Look out for Miami. Always take the underdog. Shout out to Chris Denny, betting guru. My boy, back in the building. Needed it. Appreciate you, my boy. Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I appreciate you having me on. I think the thing I want to hammer home to anyone who's listening betting in March Madness, you are probably down so much money if you thought you were betting with the logic. Stop betting with what you think is going to happen and bet with Vegas for once in your life and see what happens.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Hey, we can do this again for the Final Four Championship next week.
Yes, sir. I'm with it.
That's one, man. Tourney Talk 3 coming soon. All right, y'all. Appreciate it. Pick Up Podcast. We are out.